WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Hurricane Helene has torn apart parts of North Carolina, and more than 100 people are confirmed dead across six states. FEMA's Jacqueline Rothberg.
There are 10 federal search and rescue teams that are on the ground right now, with another 9 teams on the way. That's a total of 900 personnel actively responding to search and rescue efforts in North Carolina.
About 25,000 dock workers in 14 U.S. ports are threatening to walk off the job at midnight if they aren't given raises. New York Times reporter Peter Goldman.
This is a union that is historically quite militant. Their trick is to threaten commerce and effectively sabotage international trade as a way to get higher wage demands.
NBA Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo has died from brain cancer at 58. LeBron James had an encounter with him on the court.
My fondest memory of Dikembe Mutombo, he fractured my face on my birthday in Cleveland with an elbow.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump exaggerating links between violent crime and immigration in Wisconsin over the weekend. In Prairie du Chien, Trump predicted a bleak future if Kamala Harris wins.
Your town and every town, just like it all across Wisconsin and all across our country, the heartland, the coast, it doesn't matter, will be transformed into a third world hellhole.
But the numbers show immigrants are much less likely to commit violent crimes than American-born citizens. Trump campaigns in Wanakee and Milwaukee tomorrow. Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris are neck and neck in Wisconsin in the latest poll. The New York Times and Siena College say Harris leads here 49% to 47%. Wisconsin has been decided by less than a point in four of the last six campaigns. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. A Barron County man was killed in a vehicle-on-motorcycle crash near Cameron on Sunday. According to the Barron County Sheriff's Office, the crash occurred on County Road W at 19th Street just west of the town. 63-year-old Jerry Rogers of Barron was driving a motorcycle when he collided with the vehicle being driven by a 74-year-old woman. He was pronounced deceased at the scene when authorities arrived, and the woman was treated and released. The Sheriff's Department is still investigating the cause of the crash. One person was killed in a single-vehicle UTV crash in Rusk County over the weekend. According to law enforcement authorities, the driver of the UTV was traveling on May West Road east of County Highway J in the town of Flambeau on Friday when they lost control and crashed into a wooded area off the road. When authorities arrived, both the driver and passenger were transported to the hospital. The passenger was pronounced dead at the hospital, and the driver was airlifted to a trauma hospital. The crash is under investigation. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers fall to 2-2. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Minnesota led Green Bay 28-0 at the half, but the Packers were able to move the ball and put up points in the second half before falling short against the Vikings 31-29. Coach Matt LaFleur said the team started slow but finished strong.
Unfortunately, we just didn't get enough completions, but I did think he looked, as the game went, it seemed to me that he looked more and more comfortable. We made more explosive plays, which is tough to do when a team's sitting back in two shell.
Green Bay heads to LA to play the Rams on Sunday. The Milwaukee Brewers are off today as they await their postseason opponent. The Mets and Braves play a doubleheader today to determine postseason seeding. A sweep by either team means the Brewers get Arizona. A split means Milwaukee faces the Mets tomorrow. First pitch is just after 4:30 in Milwaukee tomorrow. And after dropping two games, the 2-2 Badgers host Purdue on Saturday with an 11 a.m. kickoff. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
Weather is sponsored by Peck Roofing, Inc., veteran and locally owned and operated. Learn more online at peckroofinginc.com.
It's the last day of September, and we're spoiled under sunny skies and high soaring, summery to the mid-80s. Cold front moves through overnight, kicking up those winds and dropping our temperatures to feeling more like fall, with highs in the mid-60s tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 78 degrees.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do we do? we get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes, just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It is National Monte Cristo Day. It's kind of one of those sandwiches. It's like bell bottoms. You just haven't heard about it in like 40 years. But it got me thinking. What's a sandwich that's totally overrated? I'm going to go first. The Philly cheesesteak.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm spoiled. Because in Wisconsin, we have the brat packed with tons more taste than a Philly cheesesteak.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Up North News Radio's Pat Kreitlow joins us to kick around all things newsy. We wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Monday to us all. You can always be a part of this fine production. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Got Aaron working super hard on the board today for you. I want to thank Maggie Dawn. You folks have been sticking around. You know, Maggie and I are doing a little thing. I'll come in a little early on the Mondays, and she'll stay a little later on at Tuesdays, try to catch up and hang out with each other. Really appreciate her bringing me on and the ability to talk with my dear friend Maggie. Check her show out 2 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday here on the Civic Media Network. Big show for you today. We got a guest coming on. His name is James Vanderloo. He's the head of OEC Group in Milwaukee, a facilitator of importing goods from all over the globe. Import, export. There's apparently some port workers going to go on strike. Perhaps we'll talk about that. Perhaps we'll get into the economics of tariffs and how that works, how that impacts his business, and how that impacts us consumers here in the great United States of America. Also, as we discussed briefly with Maggie in the last hour, the storm barreling through Florida and southern parts of this country, devastating, over 100 dead, many, many missing. Hopefully, we keep our fingers crossed. That's just an impact of cell towers being down and folks not being able to reach and talk to their loved ones. But this has been a terrible storm. There has been federal approval for disaster relief monies from the administration to North Carolina, certainly. And as mentioned, you know, Donald Trump, some of the megas already trying to make this a political issue. You know, the waters haven't even receded yet. And you know, Donald Trump's out there making outrageous claims. Now that somehow, some way, the Republicans are getting shafted by the Democratic administrations in North Carolina and in the federal government. Of course, there is no proof to that. That's just Donald Trump talking trash. And the first one who brings politics into a natural disaster loses. So congratulations, MAGA. Didn't take you very long, did it? Also, in that regard, Trump was in the great state of Wisconsin over the weekend. Can you believe it? He keeps coming here over and over and over again, and he keeps making terrible news because that's what Donald Trump does. And some of the news, the headlines as it describes Donald Trump's efforts to come here, I love this one. Donald Trump delivers a dark speech on immigration, Wisconsin's prairie to shame. And we have a little bit of sound from this and some other reporting as well from the New Republic, I guess in some regards admonishing the New York Times, the Washington Post on their coverage, this sane washing. Because, folks, as we get closer and closer to this election, the craziness, I'm trying not to swear, the craziness will continue. That's what happens. You know, we're talking, what, 35 days from to the election. The trend line is not going great for the former president, and his speeches are rambling and incoherent. and they're getting certainly getting darker. They're getting more vitriolic, if that's even possible, and more insulting and just crazy. This is crazy talk. And I think the mainstream media needs to report it accurately. And I think some of them perhaps don't. The craziness is a factor. The sane washing is a thing. But wait, there's more. According to Jessica Rodriguez over at the Journal Sentinel, Trump coming back tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow. He was in Prairie du Chien on Saturday, and he's going to Dane County. He will be at Dane Manufacturing in Waunakee at 1:30 tomorrow. Donald Trump heading into Dane County, man. You know, they told him, all of his advisors and all the smart people in the campaign, hey, man, don't give up on Dane County. Go back to Dane County. Go to Dane. You got to go right into the foothold of the progressive and Democratic movement in the state of Wisconsin and show up and show them that you're there. So he's going to Waunakee, not quite downtown, but not Willie Street, but, you know, we'll take it, I guess, question mark. Then after he darkens the door of Dane County at the Dane Manufacturing in Waunakee at 1:30, he will go to Discovery World along Lake Michigan in Milwaukee at 5 p.m. Well, he will speak there. Of course, this fine show goes till 6, so I fully imagine my commute will be impacted tomorrow when he comes to Milwaukee. Let's see what else we got here. Campaign, Waunakee, Wisconsin, doors open at 10:30 a.m. at the Milwaukee stop. Let's see, doors open at 2 p.m. at 500 North Harbor, Milwaukee. So what's he going to say, right? What haven't you heard? Well, I would imagine he'll come up with some things to tell you. This dark speech, as Hope Carnop describes it in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Campaign was held indoors, although the campaign initially planned an outdoor event, but apparently the Secret Service raised concerns about its ability to secure the event due to staffing shortages. The UN General Assembly, I understand, Trump was really mad. It's like, oh, they got to go protect the Iranians, or they want to kill me. And so now I can't have my event outside. He was very distraught. According to the report, he spent much of his speech criticizing Kamala Harris over immigration. Of course, Harris visited the U.S.-Mexico border on Friday. And we did talk about this statistic that some of the righties have thrown out there. We had a caller bring it up on Friday. It came up over the weekend yesterday at the talk shows, the Sunday morning circuit, folks talking about these 13,000 immigrant murderers roaming free in the country. Well, that's not quite accurate, and as you can imagine. And we do have some additional reporting on that as well. But the tone of Donald Trump in this particular speech, I think it was worse. I think it's worse than some of the other stops he made in Wisconsin. And in some ways, the mentally impaired comments. I mean, what an insulting comment to make in so many ways. Because of course there are folks with challenges, you know, and we know that Donald Trump made fun of disabilities before, of handicaps before, whatever your terminology is, the special, those with special gifts, made fun of them before. Oh, I don't remember all these kinds of things. And well, so is it surprising that he would, you know, throw these terms around just so willingly? Of course it isn't. It's only surprising that it took him this long to go this route. But Aaron, if you would, let's get a little flavor of this. Cut number one, Trump in Prairie du Chien.
Kamala is mentally impaired. If a Republican did what she did, that Republican would be impeached and removed from office, and rightfully so, for high crimes and misdemeanors. Joe Biden became mentally impaired. Kamala was born that way. She was born that way. And if you think about it, only a mentally disabled person could have allowed this to happen to our country. Anybody would know this.
I mean, everybody knows. Everybody's talking about it. So there he is. You know, is it surprising? No, of course not. He's an insulting, terrible human being, and that's how he talks. That's what he thinks. Now, of course, Kamala Harris is probably one of the smartest people he would ever face. We saw him clean the floor with him during the debate. And apparently he's what? He's not going to debate her again. It's too late. I would think, well, certainly, sir, if you think she has all these challenges, you should be banging down the doors to debate her again. Some more from Trump in Prairie du Chien over the weekend. Of course, prosecuting the cheaters Well, let's hear what he has to say. I hope he's not talking about himself. Cut two, please, Aaron.
If we win and when we win, we're going to prosecute people that cheat on this election. And if we can, we'll go back to the last one, too, if we're allowed. But we're going to prosecute people, so at least they know that's going to happen.
Now, again, is it at all ironic that this guy is literally facing trial, federal trial, for interfering with the election? You know, the one they keep trying to bump back and bump back. The one that, Jack Smith put a 180-page document in front of the judge specifying, laying out some of the specifics of the crimes that Donald Trump committed and the folks around him and some of the testimony thereof. And now the big question for the judge is, how much of that document will be released to the public? How much of that, if any, how much of that document will be redacted, if any? Presumably, they, you know, take out the names and all that. But, you know, the subject, what they said, what their testimony is, what they will testify to. Well, I think some of that information would be very relevant. And so for a guy who says, if we win, we're going to prosecute people who cheat. Well, again, he lost and he's being prosecuted for his efforts to cheat, his efforts to cheat, to overturn the election. That's what January 6th was. That's what the soft coup was. That's what the fraudulent elector scheme was all about. Multi-pronged, multi-state, a multi-state national conspiracy. Man, it sounds crazy, right? Sounds like some of those righties in QAnon. But unfortunately, we have grand juries and trials to show that, no, this is not a conspiracy. This is not something out of left field. This was a plan put forth by Donald Trump and his lackeys to overturn the government. I don't know how you can say that enough, but he's really concerned about the cheaters. Here we go. No one speaks English in Springfield. Oh, of course. Let's hear what he has to say. Cut three.
The majority of the school cannot speak English in Ohio, Springfield. They can't speak English. They're taking over the schools. There's nobody that can speak English. And the mayor's looking for interpreters. Isn't that wonderful? How can this happen?
You know, the Haitian immigrants that are here legally, employed legally by a Trump supporter who has supported his Haitian employees, his Haitian neighbors. And for his support for the folks that came and work in his factory, work in his job, he's been getting death threats from the other megas. So, you know, sooner or later, you're on that list. Sooner or later, every single one of you megas, in some way, shape, or form, you will be on the list. And it's not the list from the Marxist, socialist, communist, progressive, whatever. No, man. The call's coming from the inside. This is your own crew. They come after you. Sooner or later, every single one of you will be a coffee boy that nobody knows, nobody cares about. So heaven forbid you actually need the help of a government, an organization, of a society, for self-governance, for we the people, if you got someone like Trump in charge. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in. You can call us at 855-752-4842. We have a few more cuts from Trump over the weekend. And again, a special guest, James Vanderloo, coming in at the bottom of the hour. Get your calls next, 855-757.
The Tap.
Wurzer Builders invites you to discover easy living in their 55-plus senior condos conveniently located on Eau Claire's south side in the Timber Bluff neighborhood development. Enjoy quality custom units with well-thought-out floor plans, kitchens with center islands and granite countertops, charming front porches, and outdoor patios with pergolas. Units are two-bedroom, two-bath, come complete with appliances, and start in the 270s. Contact Wurzer Builders today for lot availability and building details at info@wurzerbuilders.com.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WCFW website at WCFW.fm. Your news just for the Eau Claire area. I'm James Kelly with WCFW News.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like...
It's only glass. Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media radio network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4824-2855-75-CIVIC. As mentioned, Trump was in Wisconsin over the weekend, and don't worry if you missed it, he's coming back again. He'll be in Dane County tomorrow, then he'll roll over to Milwaukee County. He'll be along the lakefront doing the Trump Show. The only way he can, he'll be in Milwaukee tomorrow at 5 p.m. So, let's think about that when you're trying to get around town, folks. But he was here in the state of Wisconsin. We played a few clips of that. We also have some audio from him in, Erie, Pennsylvania. But one of the other statements he said here, I want to make sure I throw out there prior to getting this other sound. Again, it's all very consistent for this guy. Here's what he said. If Kamala is reelected, and I'm sure he didn't pronounce the name properly. If Kamala is reelected, your town and every town just like it, all across Wisconsin and all across our country, the heartland, the coast, it doesn't matter. It will be transformed into a third world hellhole. I mean, wow. I mean, it's hard to believe we actually made it this long without Donald Trump, and turning into a total hellhole, but he says it. If he's not reelected next time, the next 4 years, total hellhole. Just trust him. He knows. But as mentioned, he was also in Erie, PA, I believe it was. We have some sound from that. And again, just the continual ripping, let's call it, on his political competitor. Cut number 4, if you would please, Aaron.
There's something wrong with Kamala. And I just don't know what it is, but there is definitely something missing. And you know what? Everybody knows it. Yeah. She's a stupid person.
Yeah, that's stupid person. Again, you can go to the background and look at the bio. You can see the trajectory of Kamala Harris's career of service to this country. And then we can go back and look at the bio of a guy like Donald Trump. And then you can determine whether or not for yourself, you think Kamala Harris is smarter, quote unquote, than Donald Trump. I certainly do. But what I do know is she certainly has a better temperament. I'm not even talking politics here yet. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even talking about, what policies, what border policy she would enact, what tax policy she would enact, what her tariff policy may be. What's the foreign policy? What's important to her? Not even talking about any of those things. We're just talking about, character. The very basic, and Donald Trump continues to show that he does not have the character that it takes to run this country. We saw it in the White House the first time. Hopefully we've learned our lesson, but he's out there insulting everybody all the time. What, what is it about this guy that inspires anyone to vote for him? I mean, are you down with the insults? Is it, you know, the Andrew Dice Clay campaign? Is that what this is? Because that, you know, the sticks run up pretty quick. And ultimately, at some point, there's got to be a point to your candidacy, Trump. Make America great again. Oh, yeah. How? How'd you do it last time, man? Just for clarity's sake, I know we always mention this, but what year exactly was America the greatest? I'm just wondering. I'm sure Trump thinks probably when he was elected. First, for me, it was on my birthday, man. A couple more from Trump in Erie, PA. Cut number 5.
If they didn't cheat, I wouldn't even be here today. You know why? I wouldn't have to campaign. I'm here only because what? They cheat. And they cheat in this state, especially in Philadelphia.
Oh, the big
and
cities.
And I mentioned a couple of the areas, but
yeah,
for the most
go
part,
ahead.
But Philadelphia is out of control. Yeah, Detroit is out of control.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Atlanta is out of control. Places are out of control. Out of control. Because of control. If there was no cheating, if God came down from a high and said, I am going to be your vote tabulator for this election, I would leave this podium right now because I wouldn't have to speak. We wouldn't have any problem. We have to have a landslide because they cheat so damn much.
Well, I do agree that the Dems absolutely need a landslide. And as far as the cheating is concerned, the only cheating that I'm aware of that was done on any specific basis was by the Republicans, by those folks that have been charged, the fraudulent electors, and folks like Donald Trump. I mean, literally, those were the ones they're charged, man. They're going to trial for the cheating. And I think the cheating is what? Using drop boxes and encouraging people to vote? That's cheating? But literally, they are charged with it. One more. Then no more broccoli, I promise. Let's hear cut number 6.
You know, these are smart people. They're not so stupid. But they have to be taught. Now, if you had one really violent day, like a guy like Mike Kelly, put him in charge, Congressman Kelly, put him in charge for one day. Mike, would you say, he's right here, he's a great congressman, would you say, Mike, that if you were in charge, you would say, oh, please, don't touch them, don't touch them, let them rob your store, let all these stores go out of business, right? They don't pay rent, the city doesn't have, it's a chain of events that's so bad. One rough hour, and I mean real rough, the word will get out and it will end immediately. End immediately. You know, it'll end immediately.
You know, The Purge. Of course, that's The Purge. He's talking about the movie The Purge, where for like 12 or 24 hours, nothing is illegal. Everything is legal. And what makes me laugh about folks here is they're so cavalier about, you know, endorsing The Purge or endorsing the Civil War. They all think that they're going to be fine. You know, it's going to be the other ones that suffer, never them. And of course, that is so far from the truth. Everybody suffers. Joe from Madison, you're up. Welcome, Joe. What do you got for us?
Well, I think when it comes to one rough hour, that myself and a good number of women that Mr. Trump had sexually assaulted and hadn't gone to trial, or E. Jean Carroll, who spent so much time trying to get him to rights, the people in the jury who realize that this guy is still running away from the 34 felony counts that were adjudged against him. I think one rough hour with Trump would be lovely. I offer my services in that regard. And I don't think he realized the inner Wolverine that a lot of women have when they think about what this guy has done to their rights in this country. I would offer that his disaster relief with Puerto Rico, remember, the American territory, included the projectiles of paper towels lobbed at the audience, which, of course, you know, that was helpful. That was hugely helpful. And I think it's just worth remembering when this guy starts peeing on Kamala Harris, it's worth remembering she was the attorney general of a state with 30 million people in it. It is the fifth largest economy in the world, okay? Not in the States, in the world. It is a powerhouse. And through that office, she brought charges against big banks that were screwing people off and...
Got to cut you short, Joe. Yes, he certainly qualified. James Vanderloo, head at OEC Group in Milwaukee. We're going to discuss the port workers' strike and tariffs.
This is 93.5 The Tap. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 25 Red Cross volunteers from Wisconsin are part of the Hurricane Helene relief effort in the southeastern United States. Their assignments could change at any time. In fact, Red Cross volunteers have to be on standby in case they're needed more somewhere else in the country. Pro-democracy groups are keeping up the pressure on the mayor of Wausau. Doug Dinney removed a ballot drop box out of public reach last week. Critics call the move voter suppression. Sam Liebert is with the group All Voting is Local.
This is just another part of a larger puzzle of continued voter suppression and trying to have fewer people vote in the upcoming November election.
There was a similar controversy in Beaver Dam, where the Dodge County Sheriff urged local clerks not to use drop boxes. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. A Chicago woman was arrested near Eau Claire on Sunday and accused of driving under the influence with three young children in the car. According to the Wisconsin State Patrol, 37-year-old Wilma Peoples was pulled over for speeding on I-94 near milepost 76 at around 11 a.m. on Sunday. The trooper that pulled her over then observed signs of impairment, and she was taken to Mayo Hospital in Eau Claire for an evidentiary blood test. The three children, two 10-year-olds and a 9-year-old, were released to another responsible adult. A Blair company has been fined by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration following the death of an employee earlier this year. According to OSHA officials, an employee of Liquid Engineering Corporation died in March after becoming fatigued while using diving equipment to clean sediment out of a pipe before falling to the bottom of the tank. Authorities attempted life-saving measures, but they were pronounced deceased at the scene. The company was fined over $85,000 after it was determined that drowning was the cause of death.
And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Wisconsin native Mark Ruffalo took home a Best Documentary Emmy for his film Lakota Nation versus the United States. It all went down at the 45th Annual News and Documentary Emmy Awards last Thursday in New York City. The documentary details the seizure in 1876 of Black Hills and chronicles the Lakota tribe's fight to reclaim the land. Freddie Prinze Jr. has signed on for another installment of I Know What You Did Last Summer. This will be the fourth film in the franchise. Jennifer Love Hewitt is in talks but has not signed on to the project yet. This will be the third film of the franchise for Prinze. Another installment of the franchise had different actors and went right to video in 2006. Producers say they are hoping to have the film in theaters in the summer of 2025. If the original cast gets much older, the next installment can be called I Totally Forgot What Happened That One Summer. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Breezy this evening, mostly clear tonight and cooler with lows in the mid-40s. Not as warm tomorrow, mid-60s with sun, but back to the upper 70s with sunshine Wednesday. Breezy as well. It drops back to the upper 60s Thursday and partly cloudy. Right now it's 80.
The Todd Alba Show.
They're eating the pets.
J.D. Vance has said on the air that he admitted it was all a lie. Pat Kreitlow, words have consequences.
Of course they do. When we're talking about the incendiary remarks about immigrants, we're not talking about the fact that it was Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone who killed the bipartisan border security and immigration reform bill.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
The Second Amendment is designed to keep the power in this country with the people.
It's not the Second Amendment that preserves power in the people. It's elections, you moron. A dictator like Donald Trump that is a king and immune from prosecution, that is what erodes democracy. Kamala Harris and Uncle Tim Walz, they own guns. Nobody's coming for them. Chillax, Glenn. Get yourself some facts.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, Dan Davies and Craig Kennett talk about their giant spider invasion event, and
the lovable producer Connor will give a full report after watching in person the green and gold take on the purple people eaters.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 till 8.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be part of this fine production at 855-752-4842. But callers, please be patient. We will get to you. Want to introduce James Vanderloo. He is the head of OEC Group in Milwaukee. He is our resident trade expert. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dom. Good afternoon and great to be with you.
Certainly appreciate it. Trade has been a topic of conversation for quite some time, and now there is a new priority on it. Apparently, port strikes. Some of the workers not too happy with their situation. James, but let's before we get into that and the tariffs part of it, let's get into your background a little bit. What does OEC do, and how do they do it?
Well, OEC Group is a company that's been around for 40 years. We specialize in helping our customers import, export that entire process. So whether you need customs brokerage delivery or help overseas arranging shipments both to and from, we facilitate that entire process. I wish I could make it a little bit more difficult than that, but that's pretty much what we do.
So, James, when I was in grad school, I did a stint in Metro Detroit working for a local marble and granite facility. Yeah. And these guys had the hookup, man. We were getting containers of marble and granite directly from Italy. And I used a broker, presumably much like yours, to once the thing was ordered, we had to track it through and get it through shipment and get it in. And once it got here, you had to get on the rail. Then it had to get on the truck and get to the yard. I mean, there was a lot involved with that. So I know a little bit about what you speak. I remember when the first thing I got, James, was the container numbers. If you see the containers driving down the highway on the back of the semis, they have the container number on there. That's basically like their license plate, right?
Yeah, right. No, hey, before I started working in this industry, I didn't really notice them. Now I see them in my nightmares and in my dreams. So, yeah, I see them everywhere. It's very
all right,
true.
So lots of import-export, very, very important here. Obviously, we're global superpower here, and we're buying and selling things all over the country. What's the status on the strike? What is the issue as you see it, James?
So this is a big issue. These contract negotiations come around every 6 years between the ILA, which is the International Longshoremen Association, and the USMX, which is the United States Maritime Association. The ILA, you obviously know, represents the about 85,000 dock workers on the East Coast unit. And then we have the USMX, who represents basically the port operators, the businesses that kind of come in, and a lot of the foreign-owned steamship lines that bring all the cargo in that you talked about. And, you know, hearing that you bring in the Italian marble, that must have been that was the good stuff from Italy. So, you know, hey, I'm definitely familiar with that still. So. Yeah, but what's going on right now is, they're discussing basically a wage increase because of inflation, because of the record profits that the carriers made during COVID. These union workers were out there working, a lot of people were working from home, and so they want to, deservedly a piece of the pie, and so they're having a contentious debate about that, and also one regarding automation at the ports and making sure that the union workers have protected jobs, both, in retirement and current jobs. So they're looking for, a bigger piece of the pie, and their other counterparts to both the West Coast and some of the rail workers have received higher pay. And so that's kind of where we find ourselves today. And they're at a bit of an impasse. And the scary part is that they're now kind of going through the media and going to the government to kind of elicit help. And kind of mediation through this, which shows that the two sides aren't going to solve this problem probably on their own. So that's what we're looking into probably starting tomorrow.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's James Vanderloo. He's head at the OEC Group in Milwaukee, importer, exporter. He was our trade expert. The automation thing. I was reading some articles on this today because this is pretty breaking news. I mean, folks, there's writing up all over. This could be a big problem for business in the state. But let's talk about the automation portion specifically. Certainly over the years, James, automation has become a thing. It continues to be a thing. Does AI play into this? And how does one protect the labor of the union, but not then also take advantage of the benefits of automation?
It's a great question. And it's like, that's why this is such a complicated and a nuanced argument right now, because, the longshoremen are looking at this just like all of us, where, you're going to stores, you're seeing self-checkout, you're seeing, the advancement of technology replacing workers, in many different ways. And so You know, there is a little bit interesting caveat to this. Technically, if you look at it statistically, the U.S. ports are a bit inefficient in terms of, like, if you look at things globally. There's a lot to that. That's not certainly not an indictment of the ILA workers or anything like that. It's just that, as you might know, it's very difficult to get more infrastructure in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, to get rails, to get ports, these things that were built, you know, a long time ago. It's a very, very difficult process. It's very capital intensive. This will be something that, you know, if they don't resolve in this contract, it will continue to be an issue as more and more ports modernize. And as, you know, we look to kind of bridge that gap exactly. And I think that's really the crux of why this is going to be such a difficult negotiation, is because you really have to balance that fine line between, hey, obviously having better infrastructure helps us all out from an efficiency standpoint and for bringing more business. But you also want to make sure that the workers are protected and to make sure that they've got, you know, jobs to do well into the future.
James, maybe a side note here. Have you seen your own experience, some of the Inflation Reduction Act and some of the legislation, the Infrastructures Act, put out by Congress? Have you seen any of that money getting spent on the ports? Is there any return on that yet?
We haven't seen as much as kind of what we would like to see. There are some really good success stories in Savannah and some of these East Coast ports of, you know, making deeper dredging so that they can accept bigger ships. There is a lot of development going on at the ports, but we haven't really seen a return on investment for any of that act yet. That hasn't really hit it quite as much as we were hoping.
Yeah, that infrastructure probably takes quite some time to get up and run and get the money spent and get the work done. It's one thing to import marble and granite, James. It's another thing to, if you have, you know, perishable items. What will happen if this strike, and it sounds like it's going to hit tomorrow, and how many strikers are we talking about? And then what happens to those folks who have perishable goods on these containers?
So the ILA represents about 85,000 workers. Who will actually be walking out to this is probably close to around 45,000. Many people don't know this, but actually the ILA will help support, like, cruise ships and different things like that are still going in the market, but they're just totally going to basically cut off the flow of commercial goods. What that actually affects a lot more is kind of what's your point, the U.S. agriculture. So exports going out, or you know, any shipments that haven't hit by tomorrow, if they're not processed at the ports, they're either sitting on a ship or they're sitting in a port facility waiting for this to get resolved. Obviously, that eliminates any kind of perishable goods that don't have a very long shelf life. The East Coast stopped accepting any kind of refrigerated bookings to the East Coast about a week or so ago. And so anything that requires that kind of thing is also, you know, going to suffer. So you've got things like chocolate and bananas. Bananas have obviously been the one that some of the media attention is drawn to. But yeah, those kind of things are at risk for going, you know, for affecting that. And then, like I said, any kind of exports that we have that go to Europe, you know, those things will also either need to be rerouted through the West Coast, or they'll need to wait until this is resolved.
James Vanderloo, head of OEC Group in Milwaukee. James, it's harvest season, man. I mean, is this timed in any way, shape, or form to make it, you know, more impactful to your opinion?
Whether it's a good luck on the part of the union or not, it's everything is sort of converging right now. You've got an election year, and B, a harvest season. No, this was always the time that their contract was going to expire. But again, you know, it is one of those things that we are kind of converging toward this perfect storm. And I should have probably not used that turn of phrase with the devastation in Helene that's going on. That's going to further compound. Going to further compound these issues, because that's the side of the coast where these are going to be affected too. So yeah, it's going to affect. It's going to affect a lot. And it is one of those things where it's a tough thing, because one day of delay, they say, is about 4 to 6 days of recovery. So, you know, some of our contacts within the ILA have stated that, you know, they're prepared at least for a 10 to 14 day strike, you know, possibly more than that if it goes on. So you're looking, you know, possibly some residual effects into 2025.
And James, with regard to perishables and those kinds of things, for your clients, if someone wants to organize something like this, they better have had it done already, I'm assuming. But what about insurance? Like, how does that play into the cost of shipping these goods, especially in this kind of environment?
So that's a great point, Dom. This idea of insurance. So earlier this year, vessels had to reroute their containers through the East Coast due to the Houthis in Yemen kind of firing pot shots. So they had to kind of go around the Horn of Africa, which took them about an extra 4,000 to 8,000 miles, depending on where you're going. So a lot of these people have been kind of having these problems beforehand. We were expecting this to some degree. This will be the first time in 50 years that they will have gone on, the ILA has gone on strike. Typically, these things are resolved pretty amicably without much ado. And obviously, that's why we're talking about it now. But so they've seen some of these rising costs. They've seen things taking longer to get to the East Coast. So these issues have kind of just been compounding all year. And that's kind of, and I will say that there are probably some larger companies and big box stores that kind of saw this and were preparing ahead of time. So there are probably some companies that have, 4 to 6 weeks of reserve materials on hand, especially with the holidays so close. But I think some of the problems that you could run into is if you were a smaller business, or if you maybe weren't kind of prepared for this, and, maybe you only bring in a couple containers a month, but those two containers are such a big proportion of your total, your total book of business. Those are the people that are going to get disproportionately affected by anything that happens on that coast.
James, is there a rule of supply for this? I mean, do folks generally, and again, you have a varied, import export means a lot of things. So how many folks are like living on the edge? As mentioned, if you bring in, two containers a month on average, they jump up to 4 or 6 to try to get it out? How are they adapting ahead of time to try to help cope with this?
So the best thing that we've been looking at is diversifying, using as much of many of the coastlines as possible, really kind of preparing yourself from a business to be able to enter the country from, let's say, for instance, like around here, either a lot of people from Wisconsin will, if they're importing into Wisconsin, they'll use either the Chicago rail system, the Minneapolis rail system, and to some smaller degree, the Chippewa Falls has a container yard there. So just being able to sort of have an idea of what the costs are associated with shipping to all of those places, shipping through Canada, shipping through Seattle, Tacoma, and NLA, in addition to the East Coast ports. That's kind of the best strategy to get out ahead of this. And that's kind of what we've been doing with our clients. But at the end of the day, this does, eliminate a lot of options. Yeah. And there's just certain companies that have their infrastructure set up to better be handled through the East Coast. And those people obviously have to reroute and spend some time, getting through the congestion on the West Coast.
James Vanderloo, head of OEC Group in Milwaukee. Last couple of minutes here, James. Let's talk about the tariffs. I talked about the containers used to bring in to Detroit from Italy. If an administration taps a 100% increase on that material, who ultimately pays for that, Jim?
So that's a great question, and there's always a lot of debate about it. Ultimately, unless the business is willing to eat the cost, it's always going to be the consumer at the end of the day that usually absorbs the cost of the tariff. So, we've seen, and I would say that tariffs used to be a little bit more of a partisan issue. We know the Trump stance is he's going to just tariff basically everything. Right. And then Joe Biden has implemented some tariffs in solidarity with some other countries, specifically targeted towards China on electric vehicles, various steel and aluminum commodities. So it's certainly a tool in the toolbox of our government officials. And it just kind of, it depends. So basically, though, the consumer is the one that pays for it at the end of the day through higher prices.
And James, does OEC, who tracks that? How is that actually implemented and ultimately paid?
No, that's actually a very, very good question. I would say that the logistics industry has been pretty slow to the uptake with getting sort of digitization, more technology in there. Over the past few years, I think that you've seen a lot more of those data points being administered. The thing is you really, until it takes usually probably about 4 to 5 months from when the tariff is implemented to start to gather that type of data. So it's just, we have to kind of wait and see how it's going to go. But we know that if it's a 10%, it's going to result in higher prices across the board.
Thank you, James Vanderloo, head at OEC Group in Milwaukee, a leading facilitator of importing and exporting goods. I certainly appreciate you coming around and hanging out with us, James.
Appreciate it, Dom. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. We're going to come back with some of your calls. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It is National Monte Cristo Day. It's kind of one of those sandwiches, it's like bell bottoms. You just haven't heard about it in like 40 years. But it got me thinking, what's a sandwich that's totally overrated? I'm going to go first, the Philly cheesesteak.
Really?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm spoiled. Because in Wisconsin, we have the brat packed with tons more taste than a Philly cheesesteak.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Is it for the money? No, it isn't for the fun. It's a plan, a scam, a diagram. For the benefit of everyone, you gotta have a little respect.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. I want to thank our most recent guest, James Vanderloo from the OEC Group, talking a little import-export. Hope you got edified a little bit. Of course, the answer to the question, tariffs. Who pays them? I think James said mostly, unless the owner, the importer, whoever's paying that bill wants to absorb the cost and not pass it along. Typically, that will be paid by the consumer. Let's remember that. It's a tax on the consumer, and if you're the one consuming, that means you. And we're not bringing containers in to not sell stuff to Americans here, so ultimately, you will pay the price. Some reporting on this, found this one at The Hill. Longshoremen strike deadline looms large over economy and election. Tens of thousands of longshoremen in 14 ports along the East Coast and Gulf of Mexico poised to walk off the job Tuesday morning if the union and employers cannot reach a new labor agreement by midnight, threatening to disrupt both the economy and the 2024 election. Negotiations between the International Longshoremen's Association, as James mentioned, that's the ILA, and the U.S. Maritime Alliance, USMX, soured earlier this summer, and the two sides remain far apart on key issues, with the contract set to expire tomorrow. 85,000 longshoremen is represented by the ILA, and the USMX has about 25,000 port workers. This would be the union's first strike at all East Coast and Gulf Coast ports since 1977. It's a long time. Now, the ports handle a majority of U.S. container volume and a quarter of the annual international trade in the U.S., about $3 trillion. A one-week strike could cost the economy $3.78 billion and increase the cost of consumer goods, putting pressure on inflation. Now, estimates for the economic impact of the strike vary widely, from the $540 million per day forecast by the Conference Board, estimates to be as high as $5 billion, according to analysts at JP Morgan. Well, that's a big range, man. $500 million to $5 billion. Now, despite the potential economic impact, the White House has said it is not considering invoking the Taft-Hartley Act, a 1947 law that allows the president to request an 80-day court-ordered cooling-off period if a strike would imperil the national health or safety. When President Biden was asked on Sunday whether he would intervene to stop the impending port strike, he said no. When asked why, President cited collective bargaining, quote, "We support collective bargaining. We believe it's the best way for both American workers and employers to come to a fair agreement, one that benefits the workers in a way that reflects the success of the companies," White House spokesperson Robin Patterson said. Patterson also noted that the weekend senior officials have been in touch with USMX representatives, urging them to come to a fair agreement fairly and quickly, one that reflects the success of the companies. Senior officials have been in touch with the ILA to deliver the same message. Now, the union demanding a ban on the automation of cranes, gates, and container trucks, as well as higher wages. In announcing the statewide preparations for the strike on Monday, New York Governor Kathy Hochul called on both sides to come to an agreement that respects workers and ensures commerce can continue through our nation's busiest ports here in New York. Rep. David Rauser, a Republican from North Carolina who represents Wilmington, one of the sites of the potential port strikes, took aim at the Biden administration in a Monday morning post on the social medias. Of course he did. A week-long strike would create a backlog at our ports until November. The Biden-Harris administration has failed to protect our economy and the American consumers. So what about the American workers, sir? What about the folks that are on the docks? You know, the essential folks that were there dealing with the supply crisis during COVID. What about those folks? Are you worried about them too, or just worried that maybe your G.I. Joe toy from China is going to be, you know, delayed a little bit? Some lawmakers have expressed their support for striking workers while calling for an agreement to minimize the economic impact. Rep. Jerry Nadler, he's a Democrat from New York who represents part of Manhattan, said he's proud to stand with the longshoremen as they fight for fair wages, protections, and respect they deserve. They are the backbone of the U.S. economy, keeping our ports and supply chain running smoothly. During the pandemic, the longshoremen stood with us to keep shelves stocked across the nation, Nadler said. It is my hope that both parties quickly come to an agreement to prevent a strike with wide-ranging impacts on the port operators, economy, and longshoremen. And finally, Rep. Troy Carter, a Democrat from Louisiana, represents New Orleans, another potential strike site, said both parties must come together in good faith to find a solution that respects workers' rights while minimizing economic disruption. Every worker deserves fair pay for their labor, period. I fully support the International Longshoremen's Association right to bargain for fair pay, benefits, and working conditions. I also recognize the significant impact a strike of the scale could have on the U.S. economy. Former President George W. Bush was the last president to invoke Taft-Hartley, using it in 2002 to end the lockout of longshore workers represented by the International Longshore and Warehouses Union. But pulling that lever could be a political minefield so close to the election. More to it, folks. But yeah, kind of a big deal. Kind of a big deal. And I certainly support, you know, the workers and the union, the laborers, man, you know, fight for what you can. You know, the profits of the importers, I haven't seen it really reported here, but certainly, you know, given the circumstances and the way we see the market has returning, the Dow has returned, we see the businesses increase, we see our GDP, unemployment low. Presumably, these folks are making lots of money as well. Let's get Tim in from Wales. Tim, I can give you about 60 seconds. What do you got for us?
He should intervene to block the strike. Just like two years ago, he did the same thing with the railroad and blocked the strike from the U.S. railroad.
Shouldn't he let it play out a little bit, see how it happens, let them try to get their deal done first, don't you think, Tim?
He stepped in pretty quick with the U.S. railroad because that would have shut everything down internally, not just for foreign imports.
Right on. Appreciate your opinion. Tim says, do it. Deal. Make it happen. President Joe Biden, I say give him some time. Put some pressure on these companies. Folks, this is the Dom Salvi Show. Coming back, more of your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll preview the vice presidential debate. J.D. Vance taking on Tim Walz right here. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious?
which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The-